34 to 46. Pull back. Wait a minute. Go right. Stop. Enhance 5719. Track 45 left. Stop. Enhance 15 to 23.
Evocative soundtrack of Ridley Scott's 1982 masterpiece Blade Runner, with Rick Deckard as played by Harrison Ford, audible through the strains of the music of Vangelis. Do androids dream of electric sheep? Philip K. Dick's prescient sci-fi novel was the source material for Blade Runner. The book and subsequent film asked questions about humanity's relationship with our planet that are far more relevant today than perhaps they were when Dick published his novel back in 1968. Declan Burke, as part of his Book Into Film series, joins me now to talk about one of the most influential sci-fi adaptations in modern cinematic history. Philip Kindred Dick, first of all, Declan, if you would, he really, through his science fiction, they were philosophical treatises that he was writing in some ways in an entertaining fashion.
There's no doubt about that, Sean. He was certainly a man for the big ideas, and you know, one criticism that's been levelled at him is that his ideas were far more sophisticated than his actual prose, and there's a certain amount of truth in that. But in terms of the ideas that he kind of threw out on a novel by novel basis, he was writing, you know, back in the 50s and into the 60s, about alternate realities, about monopolistic corporations, authoritarian governments, altered states, the nature of reality, you know, what is human nature and what is identity. And you know, it's back then, I can only imagine how mind-blowing these books must have been, because when you go back and read a novel now, when you go back and look at Blade Runner now, as prescience is the words used in the introduction, they're phenomenally relevant to our times.
And that sometimes criticism that is levelled at him about the quality of the prose, we're talking 40 plus 44 published novels, I think, 120 plus short stories. Would a little bit less material perhaps have led to a higher quality, or do you think it's an unfair criticism?
I think it's probably a fair criticism, and I think you're right. You know, less is generally more. Having said that, Philip K. Dick led a very, very tortured life, and I think there was a compulsion, an obsession with getting these stories out. We'll touch on a little later, but his life, there was a long, dark shadow across his life. His twin, Jane, she died 6 weeks after their birth in 1929, and that profoundly affected his life. And to a certain extent, this idea of almost exorcising the phantom twin is how Jane has been described in relation to his work. It fed into many of his novels. And you know, if I can only just touch on some of the adaptations, which would be familiar, I'm sure, to the listeners. Blade Runner we're talking about now, Total Recall, Minority Report, Scanner Darkly, The Adjustment Bureau, The Man in the High Castle was adapted for TV very recently, I think started in 2015 and ran for four series. So Philip K. Dick, his ideas were big enough. They have, I think, influenced a whole generation of sci-fi filmmakers.
And the fact that there are so many adaptations perhaps says something to the medium. Maybe they're more suited to a visual medium than they are to a literary medium or a prose medium.
Yeah, we could certainly argue that when we look at Blade Runner, for example, and look how Ridley Scott rendered the imaginings of Philip K. Dick, because what reads on the page as an impressive idea, it's only when you see it on the big screen that it really has the kind of impact that Philip K. Dick probably wanted for his stories.
Well, tell us then a little bit about Rick Deckard, the character played by Harrison Ford, and the kind of world that he's living in the Philip K. Dick story.
Yeah, the novel was published in 1968, but it's set in 1992, and it's set in a futuristic world, as you can imagine, a very dystopian California. We're in the wake of an unspecified war, and the planet is dying, effectively. It's been poisoned by radioactive fallout. Virtually all natural life has died off, all kind of flora and fauna. The title comes from the fact that people are obliged now to keep electronic or robotic pets because most of the animals on the planet have died. Most of the planet's population, in fact, has left. They've gone off-world to various colonies that have been established on planets. And the reason why those colonies have been possible is because the powerful Rosen Corporation has developed androids, replicants that are virtually identical to humans in every way except for their ability to experience the higher human emotions, empathy in particular. And then Rick Deckard, his job is as a bounty hunter because the androids are sophisticated enough and intelligent enough to reject their existence as slaves, effectively. They tend to, or certainly this novel is set around a group of androids who have murdered their masters, quote-unquote, and returned to Earth to hide out and there to pretend to live among the humans. And Rick Deckard is commissioned as a bounty hunter to hunt them down and kill them or retire them, as the phrase. The novel is.
The real problems arise when he starts to empathise with the character of Rachel.
Yes, well, Rachel, who's played by Sean Young in the film, Rick Deckard is effectively summoned to the Rosen Corporation. They want to check how effective his technique is for identifying androids, because, of course, the big danger here, because androids are so similar to humans, is that a bounty hunter, a Blade Runner, might accidentally retire a human instead of retiring an android. So the Rosen Corporation asks him to do the test on Rachel. And it's a long and prolonged test, and it's only afterwards that Rick Deckard is rather shocked by the result of his test.
Let's listen to how he reacts.
She's a replicant, isn't she?
I'm impressed. How many questions does it usually take to spot one?
I don't get it, Tyrell.
How many questions?
20, 30 cross-referenced.
It took more than 100 for Rachel, didn't it?
She doesn't know.
She's beginning to suspect, I think.
Suspect? How can it not know what it is?
Commerce is our goal here at Tyrell. More human than human is our motto. Rachel is an experiment, nothing more.
We began to recognize in them a strange obsession. After all, they are emotionally inexperienced, with only a few years in which to store up the experiences which you and I take for granted. If we gift them the past, we create a cushion or pillow for their emotions, and consequently, we can control them better.
Memories. You're talking about memories.
He sure is. That's Harrison Ford there as Deckard in Blade Runner, and Declan Burke speaking to us about the move from book to film in the case of Blade Runner. The Phantom Twin, then, does it make its way into Do Androids Dream and into Blade Runner, Declan?
Oh, I think it's absolutely crucial to this story. We talked about his twin, Philip's twin, Jane, unfortunately, who died when he was 6 weeks old. And he was haunted all his life that the wrong twin had died and that perhaps it should have been he who died. So we frequently come across this idea of these kind of ghostly characters or these phantom twins. And in the novel, the androids are virtually indistinguishable from the human creators. They're creatures who inhabit a kind of a shadow land between reality and a facsimile of reality. They are the phantom twins. They're the ghosts in the machine, except that they are literally machines. They are the other. And I'm not sure how advanced artificial intelligence was, Sean, when Philip K. Dick was writing this novel. But in terms of relevance today, you know, questions we're asking ourselves, how long will it be before artificial intelligence, you know, becomes emotionally intelligent? Is it entitled to the same human rights and respect for life as organic life? And what happens, Sean, when these artificial intelligence creatures start to resent the fact that they're not considered equal to those who created them?
What about then the transfer to film here? Does in fact do the philosophies and the ideas that Philip K. Dick wanted to get across in his novel, do they come across even more strongly in the film?
Well, I think Ridley Scott concentrated on certain aspects of the novel and not so much others. I mean, for example, visually, I think it's an absolute masterpiece, the way it looks. The production designer, Lawrence Paul, and Ridley Scott together have created something that looks fabulous even now. It still looks futuristic 40 years after it was made. I think very much influenced by Fritz Lang's Metropolis, particularly when we look at the Tyrrell Corporation's building and so forth. The philosophical aspects, that idea of empathy becomes maybe less important. It's still an integral part of the story, but it becomes less important than in the novel, where it really is the prime mover of the narrative.
But perhaps where the film makes the philosophical point better than any others is in the character of Roy Batty and the tears in the rain scene. Just briefly lead us into it.
Yeah, when we think about the Blade Runner show, we're probably thinking about the tears in the Roy in the rain scene. Rutger Hauer was fabulous at Roy Batty, who is the super sophisticated replicant who understands that, you know, he has everything that it takes. And it's this final concluding, almost concluding scene that is absolutely a masterpiece.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears.
Go, Tears in the Rain from Blade Runner, and Declan Burke speaking to us about The Transfer from Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick, the book, into the film Ridley Scott's Blade Runner.